Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hero Podcast. I am Mauricio Porras, and I'm one of the co-founders of Hero. Today, we join Emiliana and Sofia from the Latam Feminist Circle on their journey to secure the ratification of the Escazú Agreement, the first regional treaty defending environmental defenders' rights and access to environmental information. They share their experiences as mobilizers, emphasizing the vital connection between the climate crisis and social issues. The Latam Feminist Circle works across 8 countries to ensure gender equality in climate negotiations and protect environmental defenders. Join the Hero movement today at herocircle.app to support their crucial policy work for as little as 6 euros a month. Get ready for an inspiring episode as Emiliana and Sofia guide us through the behind the scenes of the work of mobilizers in Latam. Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Hero Podcast. I'm very excited about today's episode because I have Emiliana and Sofia from the Latam Feminist Circle. So Emiliana and Sofia, how are you?
Hi, Mauricio. We are very happy to be here in the Hero Podcast, and we're also very happy to be able to talk today about the circle and some news and things like the Escazú Agreement are so important for our activism. And we hope that everyone has a good time in this conversation.
Great. Emmy.
Thank you for the invitation. Very happy to talk about the feminist circle for the first time. So, yes.
Amazing. So, well, before going into Hero, the circle, and all the amazing projects and campaigns that you're working on, maybe more on a personal level, I want to know, like, how did you started your journey? Like, what was that, you know, motivation to become a mobilizer? And also, how did you connect with all the members in the circle? This is one of the biggest circles on Hero with 10 members. So that is amazing to see from more than 8 countries in Latin America. So how did you all find each other, and how did you start mobilizing for change?
I think it's a very interesting question and a long story for each of us. But there's something very interesting, I would say. It's because we found each other because of the Escazú Agreement. So that's why we're so focused on it. And it's so special. I don't know, I suppose for the others as well. Because for me, it's not the reason I joined activism and I started acting, but it was the main reason. It was a change for me in my activism, because at first I was just worried about the climate crisis. But then thanks to this, I realized how connected it was to the social crisis and the social problems that we're facing, and how important it is to link it. So I think it was also the reason for a lot of us here. And we all met because we were doing Escazú campaigns in our countries. I don't think it's the main reason, but that was one of it. So yes, that's how we didn't meet like that, but kind of, and we started doing activism at the same time and working together. Some of us, we are from Latinos for Climate, which started because of the same reason. And so, yes, it was like the link, the thing that linked us.
Sophie, maybe for those who are listening to the podcast, and because we're talking a lot about the Escazú Agreement, so maybe can you tell us a bit more about what is the Escazú Agreement? And give us some context of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, the Escazú Agreement is a very important regional accord that is the first of its kind to include not only the right to access environmental information for people, but also that includes the defense of the rights of environmental defenders, which in the context of the Latin American region is very important, because as individuals doing activism with all of this work, we're in constant danger, no matter the sector where you're located. If you are in the rural area of your country, or if you are in the urban spaces, a lot of the activists suffer a lot of threats and are constantly find themselves in very dangerous situation because of that activism.
Yes, I think it's important to say that it's the first agreement that links in a really specific way human rights and climate, because we tend to see both crises as different problems. So the environmental crisis is just like people think about the ocean, the ecosystems, but at the same time, they don't realize that it's very connected to human rights, and people are dying for protecting the environment. So that shows the relation between both problems, which is like our main problem in our region, but also in other regions, of course, especially in the global south. So that's also why in Latin America, it's so important to talk about that, because as Sophie said, a lot of environmental defenders are threatened, and a lot of environmental defenders have been killed for defending the earth. So it's really important to, one, defend the ones that are still alive and defend their job and the work they have been doing, and at the same time, changing the situation and making it in a legal way, not just talking about this and saying that both problems are connected, but like making legislations and changing the law to protect them in a real way. So, and the other thing is that it's a regional agreement. So it's for the whole Latin America and the Caribbean region. So it's also really important.
And it also serves as a reference worldwide of the first treaty of its kind in this topic. And it's very alarming, because it's not like the threat to environmental defenders are a thing that happened only in the region. It's happening all over the global south. It's happening to thousands of communities that are in vulnerable positions and that are so scared to start acting to defend their communities because of those threats and because of those situations that threaten not only them, but their families, their communities, the people that they love, because of standing against these injustices. And if the Escazú Agreement is still like reaching the milestones of adding more countries to the agreement and the countries ratifying the agreement, it can also be a great reference for the rest of the world to know that it is possible to push for laws that protect and include civil societies in these processes. It could be a great reference for the world. I think that this Escazú Agreement has a particular meaning to all of those communities that are in the front lines of the fight against the climate crisis. Because I, for example, come from a vulnerable and disadvantaged community in my city. I basically live in like the outskirts of the city, the peripheral areas, how we will call it in Peru, the barriadas. And doing activism here, being a vulnerable community, is very hard, because a lot of the times people think that, well, when you think about environmental defenders, you usually think about people in the rural areas or in the indigenous communities, and that's valid. There are a lot of environmental defenders in these areas, but in the urban spaces, such as like this one, we face a lot of like land trafficking problems. But because we are in this like kind of disconnected parts of the city where we don't really have that much security or that much help from like governments and institutions, how are you supposed to feel safe standing against like projects that your own government is running, or that companies that have the support of your government are executing? How are you supposed to feel safe standing against those when you know that something terrible can happen to you or the people that you love, and you have absolutely no help from justice entities or other organizations, because being in a vulnerable community also means that you don't really have access to the networks or the resources that can protect you for your activism. So I think that this CASO agreement will be one step closer for all of us to at least feel safe with what we're doing.
No, and that is so important. And I love the way you frame it from a global perspective, right? Because I think this is something that we kind of need to keep moving and pushing more forward, is how to act locally and then think regionally and globally, because the climate crisis at the end is a global issue, right? That will affect all countries and around the world, in some places more than others. And that's where climate justice comes in. But at the end of the day, what we are trying to do through HERO, and we're so honored that we get to support your work and have your circle in our platform, is to also share that knowledge, so that some of the actions and policies that have worked in one region can be replicated in other regions. So as Sophie said, you know, having the Escazú Agreement as a reference for other regions of the world, that this is possible, that if we move together to protect those rights of the environmental defenders, it is possible. So I think the work that you're doing is setting a precedent. So thank you so much for that work that I know that you've been doing for years. So maybe going more into the HERO Latam Feminist Circle, working on specific policy to secure the environmental defenders' rights, to secure gender equality in climate negotiations as well, such as the Escazú Agreement and other global treaties. So what have been the steps? Because this has not come easy, right? And you've been doing this for years. So it's not a new campaign. It's not something that is just happening. You've been working each in your different countries to secure the Escazú Agreement and ratify it. So how has the process been? How long has it kind of taken to ratify that agreement? And moving forward, what is the circle working on to continue pushing not only for the ratification of the agreement in other countries of LATAM, but also what are the next steps to make that agreement actually actionable in each of the countries?
It was a long fight, because at first, the first problem was to get the agreement to come into effect. And for that, we needed 11 ratifications, so 11 countries to ratify it. Because the problem is that a lot of countries did sign it, but then they didn't ratify. And the difference is that when you sign an agreement, you are not forced to follow what the agreement says. So at the end, it's not forcing the country to follow the three main things that the agreement says. So at the end, signing it doesn't mean anything. And that's what happened with Colombia, for example. The president signed it, but then after 2 years, he didn't ratify it because he had a lot of power into the Congress, because the majority was people from his party. So that's like the whole story.
Well, in Peru, the current situation is that our Congress has not ratified the agreement. And I think that one of the biggest things that we're fighting right now is also the Congress trying to get them to rectify the agreement, but also the misinformation that surrounds the agreement. There are a lot of lies being spread by the authorities in the Congress and in other institutions. They talk, like, for example, the agreement is going to violate our sovereignty, which is absolutely not true. But yeah, those are the kind of things that we hear every day. And occasionally in the discussions for the rectification of the agreement. And it's very, very frustrating, because they are our authorities. Like, the people that are sitting in the highest power positions in our countries, the people that are ruling how we are protected in this environment. And it's frustrating, it's discouraging us as young activists to have to face these situations. But I think it's also a spark of hope for the thousands of vulnerable communities that will be benefited directly as a result of the implementation of this agreement. So yeah, there's a huge, there's a long fight that is left from our side. We will be pushing the government to ratify it again. And I know that it's not like they're not a young organization. Other young organizations are also fighting for the agreement. So huge thanks to them. But it's about that, right? Articulating with other young people, and not also with young people, but making this an intergenerational fight, including all of those activists that have a longer trajectory and more experience into this fight, to learn from them, to learn from how they overcome similar issues in the past, and to secure the ground for a future activist so that they don't have to have this fear to do activism, which should not happen to anyone.
So yeah, I think one of the important things that you're saying is, you know, the work, that the amount of work and time that is behind doing this campaigns and this policy work. So I think sometimes, you know, we are not conscious enough of that work that is behind, right? We probably see some news just in the media. You see some young activists on the streets, and that is like the information that people see from activism and mobilization on the news. But sometimes you don't see all the work that takes to build campaigns, to organize communities, to organize even amongst the movements. And what HERO here is trying to solve is the need for providing a basic income for mobilizers like you, right? So that you can be able to actually focus more time and have enough resources to do that work sustained over time, right? Because we know that also sometimes relying on a one-off grant for a specific campaign or project, and then what happens after that, right? Like, how do you sustain your work? And I think the important thing here is that you are taking one of the most important jobs over time. It's not a hobby. It's not something that you volunteer for. It's a full-time job to get this agreements ratified and signed and passed into law. So how do we as citizens support you and thousands of mobilizers out there that are going to be the future leaders of the world, and that you're trying to secure our present at this specific moment? So my question is, how do you think, or since, let me frame it differently, since you started building your circle on HERO and you've had the support of citizens around the world financing your work, how do you feel that has changed the way that you do your mobilization and your policy work, specifically with the Escazú Agreement?
I think that I mentioned that it was very discouraging to like do activism and have to face all of these barriers where your authorities are against you and they're lying about the thing they're doing, activism. And yeah, there's a very discouraging panorama in doing activism and in our region, in our communities, in our countries. But it also is very encouraging to see that there are a lot of people all over the world that not only care and like have very beautiful words towards us, directed to us, and that not only care, but that are also willing to give like physical support and economic support to our job, to our work. I think that that's a spark of hope for us and for our communities. And I think it's also like such a bless to be able to participate in this kind of platforms, in Hero particularly, because it's not something usually that you would see young activists being supported in this kind of ways, because like at international conferences or like at meetings and stuff with like CEOs and political representatives and stuff, a lot of people mention like that they have funds, that they have these resources to give support to young people, and that they will be doing these amazing things that they promise and they promise. And they just keep talking about this beautiful future that hasn't happened yet. And to them, it's like, okay, you have the funds, you have the resources. Where is it? Like, how can I access it? Are you going to tell me that to access this, to benefit my community, I'm going to go through like the bureaucratic process of like filling paperwork and doing more and more paperwork and going through the formal processes and just waiting for months or years for it to execute? And that's discouraging for young people, because it's like we really want to get to the point of doing the action, and we need these resources. And I think that for platforms like here that make this process so easy of getting the support from the people subscribed to our circles to us in like such an effective way, it's cool to see that there are people that actually like care about doing this work in simplified ways and in effective manners.
Yeah, and I also think it's really important to do something that you both mentioned, and it's to change the concept of what being an activist means, because as Mao said, it is a job. It is a full-time job. And when you choose to be an activist, it's not because you want to go and scream on the streets and bother some people and that's it. There's way more behind that people don't realize. And when you say you're an activist, some people will respect you and some people will make fun of you. And some people will just say, oh, so you're like Greta. Or there's so many misconceptions of what being an activist means. And behind that, there's a lot of work, as Mao said. And if we keep with this misconception, we will never be taken into consideration, into real consideration. And that's why it happens, things like the things that Sophie mentioned. Like, they said, yes, we have this opportunity, but then they never give it to you because they don't take you seriously and they won't respect you. And I think that is really linked to the concept of being an activist. And a lot of people just think that it is a joke or it is a hobby, which is not. And there's so many things behind. And also mentally, it's really hard. Like, when you see people, teenagers fighting, because, well, I started my activism 3 years ago when I was 18, but I worked with a lot of kids that were 14, 15, and when you see how engaged they are and how they have to face all of the criticism besides all of the fights that they are doing, it's a huge thing that I don't think people realize. And so, as Sophie said, it's really nice to see people supporting us for what we do, and really for what we do, and not just saying, oh yes, someone has to fight for climate justice, but it won't be me. But this proof, this is the real proof that what we're doing matters, and there's people supporting it. So it's amazing. And I also think another important thing is that the difference between the global, being an activist in the global north and being an activist in the global south is huge. And I can say this because I am from Colombia, but I live in Switzerland, so I have been in both sides and I have seen the difference. And it's really sad to see the lack of resources that activists and defenders from the global south have, because it's really different to make a campaign with resources and without. And that's what happens. Normally in the global south, you never have access to resources, grants, even connections, it's way harder than in the global north. So that changes a lot. And I'm not saying that it's easier to be an activist in the global north, because everyone has different things, but we know that there's a violence problem in the global south that is not that present in the global north, and it's just different realities. I don't want to change anything, but I'm just saying it's different, and the lack of access makes a huge difference. So the way Hero can help is really, really big, even with connections or just access to grants or funding that we don't have. It's really, really interesting, and I want to see how we can go and move forward.
Amazing, amazing. I think, I mean, my next question to you is, what does it mean for you to be a hero? But before you answer that question, I think you both are, and all the mobilizers out there are, the true definition of what a hero looks like. So I just want to thank you for all the amazing work that you do. And just to close the episode, maybe I want to get your own definition. So Emmy, for you, what does it mean to be a hero?
I think being a hero means that, I think it's related to what I said before. When you just act and you know that even though it wasn't by choice and that you didn't want, like, no one should be fighting for climate justice or for social justice. Like, this shouldn't be happening, especially kids. But it happened. And when you choose, when you choose to do it, and when you choose the good things and also the bad things, only because you want to see a better world, I think that what it means when you sacrifice things to fight for climate justice or for whatever justice you're trying to fight, because there's so many fights out there. But for me, I'm with, like, this circle is the feminist climate justice circle. So of course it's about climate justice and gender justice. So when you choose something to fight for and you sacrifice things and you continue, even though there's so many barriers and so many problems out there and so many people also against you, when you keep doing it and then you realize that there's all other people doing it, as Sophie said, when you find a community, that's like the reward. Yes, thank you. The reward of this fight. So I think it's when you choose to fight without knowing that there's going to be good things out after that, and then you find them. And I don't know if that even works as a definition, but I just think it's important to, like, keep going, because you know that at the end you will find people like you and that will support you as well.
Great. Sophie?
Well, for me, being a hero means giving my 13-year-old self a hug and giving her the opportunity to pursue the activism that she started in a safe environment with as many opportunities as we can apply to and as many resources that we can ask for to be in a safe space to do this activism, to not have to cry out of discouragement, to not have to fear if something is going to happen to her or to her friends or to her family, and to just keep these emotions and translate them into actions that can help and stop the suffering of my community. I think that's what that's what being a hero means to me. And I also think that it also means that through getting able to access these resources, I can help people in my circle, people in my community, to get closer to the movement, to get closer to the fight, to identify with what we're fighting for, and just get as many people as possible to to join to be able to achieve like the structural changes that we want to see and just be the best mobilizer I could possibly be, because it is a duty and a responsibility that we have to the world, to the future generations, to all of those that came before us and that lost their lives because of their activism, or that had to give up because of all the burden that it took to do all of this work.
Emmy, Sophie, and the Latam Feminist Circle, you're the true definition of what a hero looks like. So thank you so much for the amazing work that you're doing at Hero. We're honored and privileged to support your work. And if you want to continue supporting and extend the support to these amazing mobilizers, please do go to herocircle.app. For just €6 a month, you can help support all the amazing work that Emmy and Sophie and the Latam Feminist Circle are doing. Go check out their work. It's crucial, as you have heard in this episode. And with your support, they will be able to accelerate it and make sure that not only in Latam, but around the world, the rights of those defending the environment and defending our present and future are passed into law. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Emmy. Thank you, Sophie. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hero Podcast. Hero was born from a belief in citizen-backed solutions. We harness the power of technology to connect you to the next generation of climate leaders. Join our movement today at herocircle.app. Your legacy to the world starts here.